What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It's me, Eric Williams, and this week we have ourselves a gay icon, which I know that word is overused, but Michelle Collins is that. If you don't know Michelle, you actually do. She is every gay man's best friend and a literal icon. Listen to this woman's resume. She was one of the co-hosts of The View. She just moderated a BravoCon panel mere weeks ago. She has an almost daily podcast called The Michelle Collins Show. She had her own Sirius radio show, and she's performed live all over the world, including a show I just pissed my pants watching called Wait, Why Don't I Know You? Trigger warning, I do gush a lot in this interview because it is against my religion not to. I have followed and been obsessed with this woman for years. So please enjoy the legend, the actual gay icon that is Michelle Collins. Michelle Collins is somebody that I have adored for years upon years, and the fact that you were on That's a Gay Ass podcast makes this a gay ass national holiday. Michelle Collins, thank you for being you and for being a gay icon and for being here.
I have to tell you the funniest thing. First of all, it's a true honor to be here, Eric. And as I was just saying, I rarely do podcasts, and I said, I'm going to do Eric Williams's podcast. I'm also noticing I tried to make the background clear, and you know, I'm cat sitting and there is a big bag of dry food. Can I move it? It's going to distract me. Hold on.
If you want to move the food.
Okay. I'm back. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Michelle, well, we have to kind of call out a couple things here. Number one, yes, I've been a fan. Number two, Jim Cantiello is a dear friend of mine and a dear friend of yours and a fan of yours. And he and I will gush over a Michelle Collins. So I want to thank Jim for being a part of the facilitation of this happening. But I have a lot of questions for you, hard-hitting journalism even.
Yeah.
Because question one, you have been someone that's been aligned with one of the women who made me gay. And that's the one Miss Whoopi Goldberg. In fact, Michelle Collins, you famously crashed Whoopi Goldberg's family vacation. There's posts of yours online where you're in a hot tub with her, with Chex Notes, Michelle
her
Visage.
Daughter and Michelle Visage, yeah.
And her daughter.
And
now,
her husband's, yeah.
How many chapters will the Whoopi Goldberg vacation fill in your memoir?
Wow, it's a beautiful first question. Well, let me open by saying you have great taste, because is there anyone better on this planet than Whoopi Goldberg? And I love Whoopi. I feel very honored that I'm still in touch with her and that I, you know, can still say I'm friends with her and I truly love her. And I also love her family. And I have to tell you, if ever you get a chance to vacation with the Goldbergs, run, don't walk. But I did invite myself on that vacation because, you know, my thing is that I glom on, you know this,
yes.
But I essentially glommed onto two vacations in Sicily that happened to be right touching each other. So the first was with my high school friend and Botox doctor, Dr. Latal, who has the beauty clinic here in Miami. And they were staying at the Four Seasons. I did not stay there. I stayed at the Russian Hooker Hotel, not 5 minutes. So I mean, it was very close. Mm-hmm. But that was fantastic. And then I did end up crashing Michelle Visage's and Whoopi's whole family situation in Ortigia, Sicily. Yeah.
Would there be any dynamics about Whoopi and her family that would surprise us? I mean, I know that she is a incredible human matriarch person, but any like off mic, off camera qualities about Whoopi or her family that would just be like, oh, huh, cool.
Well, it's funny that you're asking me an off mic, off camera question on mic, on camera. So again, you know, it's funny. Before we started, your producer said, he'll try not to get too gay and too rude. And I said, well, let's keep that as a note for the hour. And you're bordering. No, listen, what am I going to say? No, I'll tell it like it is. What am I going to say? No, I mean, and I really mean this. First of all, I love her family. And I'll say that her daughter, Alex, is one of the funniest people I have ever met in my life. And what I would say, and this is not, it's going to sound, this is very true, everything I'm saying. It's going to sound like I'm kissing ass, but I'm not on purpose. They're the most low-key, down-to-earth, friendly, funny people you will ever come across in your life. If you met them without Whoopi being there, you would have no clue, in the best way, I mean that, like that they come from this stock, you know, from this iconic stock, if you will. So Alex is one of the few people on earth who can have me crying laughing. She is, I just adore her. I love her husband. I love her kids, the grandkids, the whole family. I'm a huge fan.
Well, it's actually like so unsurprising that Whoopi's family would be the most salt of the earth, because Whoopi is the character actress that we love, because she is someone who can be larger than life on camera, or whether it's giving us views on The View, but you can tell off of it all, she is a perfect hang. And that's why we love our character actresses. That's why we love our Michelle Collinses, is because yeah, when actress. You are famous actress,
famous Michelle character Collins. Actress. Michelle Collins, yeah.
I saw your show at Dynasty Typewriter in Los Angeles. And if anybody here has not yet seen Michelle Live, the show that I saw is called Wait, Why Don't I Know You? You famously did it at Joe's Pub recently. Yeah. And the lightning speed that you were able to connect with an audience, especially with a gay audience, and that's partly why you're here, is because you're really surrounded by gays so often. In fact, we've seen you photographed, we being me, myself, and I, with drag superstar Trixie Mattel. You've been seen with figure skating icon Adam Rippon, friend of the pod Brian Safi, and of course Mike Bloomberg. Tell me, Michelle Collins, what would you say is your entree into the gay manosphere? The question I ask my straight allies, who was your first, how did you know you would be beloved by the gays, and who was the first gay that you fell in love with?
Well, this is a great question. I'm glad you asked. Let me start by saying that, first of all, thank you for coming to my show. And I actually didn't know you were there, and I'm very flattered, and I'm sorry we didn't get to meet after. So now that we've gotten that out of the way.
Of course. Okay.
My mother, who, if you listen to the show or you follow me on Instagram, you know, is a gay icon. And she's like old school gay icon. She is, you know, when I was little, people would tell me in middle school or whatever that my mom looks like a drag queen. And this was in the 90s, you know, and I would come home really upset because I was a tall girl. I was bullied, like all the, you know, because you were at the show, like all these things. And it hurt my feelings. And I would come home and say, you know, Mom, they say you look like a drag queen. And she'd go, okay, most beautiful women on earth. You say thank you. Next time they say it, say thanks. And she's right. And she used to go with my dad in the 90s and 80s down to South Beach, because I'm from Miami, which is where I am right now, and go to Glam Slam, Prince's Club. And all the bouncers, who were these older gay gentlemen, would go, Miss Judy, comment. Like, my mother is a middle-aged Jewish woman who would have her hair done, the makeup done. She never left the house without makeup, always done. You know, the blazer game, unbeatable, unmatched. And so my mom, who's also very funny, although not a professional performer, but, you know, naturally hilariously funny, she already had a big gay fan base. So I kind of grew up in a house that was already kind of a gay iconic household in a way, you know.
You're a gay Nepo baby in a way.
I'm a gay Nepo baby. Well, that's beautiful. Autobiography title. Thank you. I'm done. Marked it. But, you know, as far as, you know, you wrote in the email when we were talking, you were like, oh, who was the first? I was really thinking about this because when you really think about it, how many gay icons or gay actors and cartoon characters did we grow up with as kids, not even knowing what that was, just knowing, I really like this person. Like, this is, you know, I was always a funny kid, always a performer, and I just loved funny people, which most of the time happened to be funny women or gay men in my book, you know.
But you also speak to so beautifully the idea that you were this tall dame in school getting bullied and feeling like you're sticking out. And I think many a gay kid, obviously, whether there's height or otherwise, are very much sticking out because of what are Britney Spears posters on the wall when all of the boys are, you know, too busy worrying about taking a shit next to each other at Schmitter Gallery. But that was just my twin brother. However, I think that I do. Very straight.
That's exciting. Really? fascinating to me. Okay, go on.
And that's why yeah. I think partly why I've been born into this life of gay podcastery is because I was always fraught with tension of the straight mirrored version. He's a foot shorter and we have nothing in common. But the quote unquote mirrored version of myself being sort of seen in the world as someone who like belongs, blends in, knows how to be. And yet the Michelle Collinses are people who were sort of seen as, what are
different.
You?
Seen, yeah, different.
Seen as 100%. Different. And so do you think that you're partly such, and I'm saying this, so, you know,
yeah.
No need to be humble, but do you think you're such a genius, funny person, gorgeous, all of these things because you had to figure out how to transcend the naysayers? Why do you think bullied people, why are we funny?
Listen, that's what most of the show, Wait, Why Don't I Know You? I would say like a quarter of it is talking about, and also showing pictures, what a freaky looking kid I was. I was strange. You know, I was always the tallest kid in class, and this was before the internet, so I couldn't buy ASOS jeans. You know, I was at like right. Macy's buying plus size gowns, you know, next to churchgoers thinking, I don't know if this is like my style, but I didn't really have a style. I didn't have a choice. It was either men's clothing or this like horrible women's clothing at the time, you know? So that was definitely part of it. But no, listen, I was bullied beyond. I also skipped a grade. Now this is the best podcast I've ever done. I get to brag about how the fact that I was a child prodigy, but you know, my joke about it is that by the time I got to first grade, I was so tall that the teacher was like, bitch too big. Like, we got to move her up because bitch too big. Move me straight to second grade. But I was the youngest in my class. I was the tallest. I was funny. I was strange. I was smart. I liked to read. Like, I was just a weird dork. And so there's no question that my humor was born from being othered. 100%. And 1,000%, it's why I connect so much with the gay community, because we've been through it. And like, my bullying was bad. I mean, I was like one of the bully kids. What ended up happening, and I'll own this, is that when I got to middle school, seventh grade was probably the worst year for me. As far as just like everyone's also, I think I was 12 or 11. I was really young. And just now the hormones are kicking in for people, whatever. And I really turned the corner in seventh grade. I decided I'm going to be funny. And I fell in with a group of really tough Italian sluts in my school. And I love those girls. Wherever they are, I don't keep in touch.
Shout out to the Italian sluts.
But that's why I love Italy. Why do you think I go to Italy so much? When I was with Whoopi, I'm like, we got to find the Italian sluts. I have to say thanks face to face.
Well, famously, the White Lotus Italian sluts. I think you probably felt very seen by the hookers in season two.
I
mean, those are sort of kind of classic OG Italian sluts. And we just want to tip a hat to them. So thank you.
We love those girls. By the way, that's where my friends stayed. That's the hotel my friends were at. And I was like the poor person up the road.
Quick 10-second story.
Yeah, please. When I first started going there, because I was like, oh, I get to be a poor Glommer. My Jeffrey Glommer, you know, that's my nickname.
Sure.
And so I thought, oh, great. So first day I'm going over, my friend was like, hey, one of my kids will come get you because they're not just allowing anyone inside. And I said, yeah, I got it. Because you know I'm good at like pulling the moves or whatever. Glomming. I walk in. They were like, Miss Collins. This was day two. They were like, hi, Miss Collins. Welcome back. Please write this way. Roll the red carpet out for me. I was like, oh, Giovanni, you're crazy. Like, went in. The best time. And she saw me by the pool. She goes, how did you get here? I said, girl, I walked my big ass in and they let me in. She goes, you know, her family was paying so much money. Okay. She's like, do you know that they are looking for our hotel keys every time we come in? My in-laws, my kids. I was like, well, you just got to own it sometimes. But
there's a certain it factor and a certain I belong at the White Lotus Hotel. Giovanni, how good to see you again. You need to have a certain je ne sais quoi delusional. I don't know that, but for you, it's not delusion. Certain people have like the ego delusion. I feel like you just have like, if I may quote my gay therapist I saw 42 minutes ago, you have a sense of quote unquote persona and true self. You have an ability to see who that you are valuable without bells and whistles, but you also know when to go toot toot if you have to get into a hotel in which you are not staying. Do you know what I mean?
You know, are you my gay therapist? Hold on, I'm having a moment. That is, you're really onto something with that. And that I've never been more flattered on any show. I'll do your show every week, by the way, now that we've broken the ice.
And you must.
Next week, I'm here. I've never felt better about myself. But yeah. So yeah, to go back to your question, there's no question. But then I had a moment too where I was like a bit of a bully in the eighth grade. I'll own it. Because I
knew you were gonna go there. It has to happen though, because it's all a trauma response. And you know what? Those who are bullied at one point have to bully, because we have to try on the pants for size. And I don't think that you bullied throughout your entire youth. You tried it on.
One girl.
Yeah. And one girl, like, 1 year.
She was annoying.
And annoying people deserve to be bullied. I also think that, that you...
Forgive me if you're watching to her. Yeah.
Andrea, we love you, girly. I have to say that you clearly led this life of being... beloved by the gays, but was there like a theater part of your journey in high school? Can we talk about, like, were you always forced to play the mom simply due to height? What was your gay theater experience?
Okay, so great question. So first of all, my mother, who was also tall growing up in her school, had to play the king. Speaking again about gender reversals, and this was in, you know, the 50s and 60s. So this was like
of King
was even...
and I or Princess.
No. Just like if they were doing like a biblical story, she was the king. She had to wear my grandfather's shoes, like, because she was the biggest kid in class. So they were like, okay, we got our king. There you go. So anyway, I was a speech and debater in high school. So for those who don't know, my high school did not have a great theater program. Big shout out to North Miami Beach Senior, which is now, I think, six portables near the Everglades, but it's I loved my high school, I have to tell you. And I had a great debate teacher named Mr. Ullery, who also was my brother's teacher. And my brother was the one who kind of was like, oh, you'd be great at debate. But obviously not like real debate. I'm not going to sit here and like argue people who brought files. These are like the future lawyers. Forensics has oral interpretation, dramatic interpretation, humorous, all of these different categories where you would take a full play and cut it down into 10 minutes. So one of my plays, which will have you, if you don't already know this, I think I was a junior. I played Maria Callas in Masterclass. Did you know that? Yeah. You may have. I was 15 years old in a palazzo pantsuit in a Greek accent, which obviously was Italian because they've never heard a Greek person. So I was like, Bastafini, okay. I was the sluts in White Lotus. I was like, okay, enough. All right, so we're going to learn how to sing, whatever. And I had these parents shaking because they were the judges, right? I had them shaking. I was scary. I was like 6 foot tall, 15 years old, confident, even though, you know, underneath extremely weak, but coming off very confidently. And it did pretty well, but I was up against Josh Gad, famed actor. Josh Gad was my competitor, and credit where it's due, I just was not beating Josh Gad. So, yeah.
Your villain origin story is being beaten by Josh Gad in a speech and debate.
I have a Gad complex, one might say, yes.
biography number two, Gad complex. I think we're on to something here. But if I may connect the theater history of it all, I think speech and debate, of course, makes a lot of sense for you. But you did a ploy this past summer about getting an invite to the Tony Awards. And as a theater fag myself, who feels so pulled to you because of, yes, your gay iconery, but also you just are a woman of the world, which we will get into the international travel. But you did end up going to the Tony Awards this year. What's your relationship to Broadway at the moment? Do you classify yourself as a theater queen? Any memorable moments? I just want to get into the Tonys of it all.
Yeah. I'm loving your questions. So professional. I didn't realize it was going to be such, I am having the best time of my life. I'm not even just saying it. Okay. So I did sneak into the Tonys with my old neighbor, John, who has a fabulous Instagram and TikTok account called Here in New York. And he explores, you may know him, he explores all these different corners of New York. He's wonderful. So he had an extra influencer ticket, which he gave to me. And so we went together. And I'll be honest, when it comes to modern Broadway, I'm not the biggest fan.
Yeah.
Just being very upfront, like, I need to be able to hum. I need a melody. I don't know how to put it. Like, you know, I saw Hamilton, and no shade to the Hamilton fans out there. You know, I was in Wicked when I was in The View. I was in Wicked for 2 minutes because they were like, oh, we'll put you on Broadway. And I thought, Les Mis, my favorite. They were like, Wicked. And you know how much I hate The Wizard of Oz. So I was like, oh, great. Of course. They're like fueling my nightmares. But I'm not a big modern day, but I love musicals. And like, I remember watching Guys and Dolls when I was 10, the movie. And that was where the bug bit me, where I was like, oh, this is so much fun. And look at the joy and the music. And I love to sing. And it just, it's a wondrous art form, musical theater, especially.
Did your, as your mom sort of being
confused as a drag queen. I assume that she also loved a Guys and Doll. I assume she also do you have like the Jewish dad that also like has a fixation on old Broadway and Barbara Streisand that makes people think gay, but you say no, just Jewish man with taste.
No, I know where you're going with that. No, my dad was, I mean, they loved West Side Story. You know, obviously he loved, my dad had old school taste, but like still very straight. Like he, my whole life, there are two movies he tried to get me to watch and I refused. Yankee Doodle Dandy and The Manchurian Candidate. I'm like, Dad, I love you. It's just not happening. Like he likes history. You know, he's like that.
Manchurian
kind of
Candidate
dad.
Is such a dad movie. Ugh.
Oh, please. I'm like, love him, but no, it's not happening. But no, my mom loved musicals, but you know, love music, but not to the extent I grew up. I was very lucky. I grew up going to London. And so we would see Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals. We saw Blood Brothers when I was 10, which I love. I know every word of Blood Brothers. Oh, tell me it's not true. Tears. I love it. Do you know it at all?
I don't at all. And I just want to know the three gay people who are right now going, Blood Brothers. There's about 4.5 people listening that are able to identify, but I'm not one of them. But I understand that that is now my next journey, which is to, are there even YouTube boots?
There are YouTube bootlegs, but what you should do is go on Spotify and there's the version, and I saw this version in London with Kiki D. It's the only version I acknowledge. Don't do the Broadway, none of that. There are two songs that I will emotionally manipulate people. If I'm in a road trip or whatever, I will put on Easy Terms and Tell Me It's Not True. Mm-hmm. One time I was on a road trip within the past couple of years, COVID trip, at super spreaders, you know, and I was driving, like with these people and I was like, oh, we have to listen to Blood Brothers because no one knows it. So I was like, oh, this is great. I put on Tell Me It's Not True and turned around, two of the girls in the back sobbing. They didn't even know the story. It's such a good song. They were like crying. I said, it's one of the best. It's bad though. Then I resaw it in Aylesbury, UK last year, I think, with my friend Derek. And I was like, no, this musical actually sucks. But listen to the Kiki D version. You'll thank me.
Okay, Kiki D, Tell Me It's True, and I will tell you the truth of my tears once I listen, and I cannot wait.
And
thank you for... In Easy Terms, thank you for dropping the niche Broadway. See, you're like, I don't love a Wicked or a Hamilton. I will talk about Blood Brothers and the Kiki D production. Now, when we get into we're getting into sort of like your personal lore, but career-wise, I am so in love with following you. And Jim Cantiel and I had a full conversation about your star and what we are manifesting for you. But for the listeners who maybe aren't as acquainted, you, were on The View famously in 2015, but you've also appeared on, I mean, like Chelsea Lately, Joy Behar Show, Tyra Banks Show, Wendy Williams, work with Kathy Griffin. You, though, are full of this it factor singularity, but I think you also have to be really perseverant, if I may say, in this industry. How do you find that you are able to put yourself out there so publicly, even though there is the risk of failing or even firing? Is there something that you were like taught? Is it a je ne sais quoi from your mom? How did you get back in the game after The View ended? And how do you continue to just like persevere as somebody who wants some of that je ne sais quoi?
No, because you want to know what the truth is? Like, I do it because I don't know what else I would do. So it's not even a matter of like, oh, I got to get back out there. I've never thought that. Luckily, in this day and age, you can just make your own luck kind of thing. So, you know, I have my own show and whatever else. But listen, when The View ended, everyone always wanted me to like talk shit about that show. And one day I'm sure I will. But at the moment, I'm like, listen, that was a break that people would die to have. There are people who are very accomplished, brilliant, beautiful women who have never gotten that job. And so I, despite everything, and there is some stuff, obviously, I choose to look back at that time so gratefully, because you'd be a fool. You'd be really selfish, I think, not to. And as a result of that, I was hosting these after shows. I mean, when that show ended, listen, I've been unemployed when I lived in LA. I know the difference between being unemployed or like gigs here and there. And so I was working. I was doing after shows and other things. And then I got my Sirius XM job, which I loved working there. And, you know, I was there for about 5 years. That was an amazing opportunity for me and just gave me like 3 hours a day to bullshit and do whatever else. Yeah. And so, you know, listen, it's funny because like, I've had the big break in a way. And yet now I'm like, well, maybe I'll get another big break and maybe I won't. I mean, it is what it is. Like I just do what I do and enjoy my life, you know?
But that's what I think a lot of people talk about when we're just like comparing notes in the biz of it all, is that a big break can come and then we have expectations or hopes of what comes after that. And then the like harsh reality of, oh, every break isn't forever. And I have not been on The View or had my own serious show, but I've had like enough little things that the listeners have bled through their eyes as I talk about nearly every week. But like I got to like play a big role in a big national tour of a musical, and I got back to New York thinking like, can't wait for Broadway. Didn't work for 8 months. So I think there's such a difficult strength that you need to cultivate in like, oh my God, the big break says something about me and my career. And then if it doesn't pan out in the way that you thought it would, we have to really remind ourselves that we will still be here because A, we can't do anything else, but B, there's no other choice. And I think that's like it. Sort of the harsh reality of what we do. But
this isn't just a game. It's a once in a generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Your show, the Michelle Collins Show, we had Peru Flores on this pod recently,
and
you cultivate such an amazing community of whether it's co-hosts or talking points, and you really get into some of the current events of it all. Do you feel, in terms of the Bravo current events of it all, how do you feel about Rachel Zoe coming onto Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? Are you excited for this season?
So I actually just watched, I think possibly both episodes. I think I'm fully up to date on it. And you know, I'm going to say something really terrible. At first I was not excited. I never watched her show. I love Brad Goreski. I know Brad a little bit.
Love.
He's a sweetheart. And there was something about her look. This is a terrible thing I'm going to say. I am a misogynist. Okay. I'm laughing. No, there was a thing about her look that I just did not like. Like, I just don't know what it was. Like, she just had sourpuss face all the time. She just looked like, I couldn't, you know, when you meet someone, it's like the Olsen twins I feel the same way about, where I'm like, I can't picture them laughing. Like, I literally don't know what they would look like laughing. And that's kind of how I felt about Rachel. I don't know, you know, the common denominator there, I don't know. But I'll say that, like, I actually like her on the show. And I think she looks great. Get that out there. I think she really, I don't know, looks very fresh and natural and very pretty. And that is important to me. I'm sorry, as a housewife, I need to be able to like how you look. Sorry, it's like part of it.
Well, especially on Beverly Hills, which I think, you know, people compare franchises right now in a way that frustrates me, where it's like, the drama on this show is nothing compared to that one. And it's like, sweetie, Beverly Hills is not about people going to prison. It's about who did not get invited to what party. And like, we were looking at wealth and beauty first and foremost on Beverly Hills specifically. And Rachel Zoe, I mean, like, I don't know, a friend of mine said she might be a one season wonder, but it's too early to tell. And who are we to make
that
decision?
She's like the LA Jenna Lyons, right? Like, Jenna came into New York, and these are women who have like extremely lucrative careers outside of Bravo. Rachel, based on the amount of outsourcing I see at Marshall's and TJ Maxx alone with her label and everything. And I said that once on Watch What Happens, and people thought that was a dig. I'm like, are you on crack? Like, my dream would be to have my name on a shirt at TJ Maxx. Like, do you know how much money
that makes? Michelle Collins candle?
Forget it.
Done.
Like, you name it.
Done.
I mean, I would love a turtleneck collection. Done. I mean, the fact that I'm not on a turtleneck, also, you're welcome. I was so close to winning when I was like, I'll wear a different little shirt for Eric today. But, you know, that's amazing to me. She has a shit ton of money. She's so successful. She, you know, has already gotten divorced, unlike some of these housewives who choose to go on the show and then get divorced. But I feel like I'm okay.
I feel like so got by Bronwyn's separation because I don't know why I thought that, you know, people are saying she might be on the show so that she can be in a position to, but then and I was like, no, they were meant, they're going to make it. And then of course, 2 seconds later, I feel like a marriage and a housewife is not a coupling that will see the light of day.
No, it's, you know, I'm going to say something controversial. I think that there is an ick factor to becoming a housewife. I hate using that. There's also an ick factor to the word ick factor. I'm familiar with that.
But I agree.
There's something about it that's a little needy and a little bit like, I don't know, even if some of it I'm sure is manufactured for the show or what have you. And I love Bravo. I love Housewives. BravoCon for me was like seeing heaven. It was genuinely one of the most surreal things I've ever done in my life. So I really am not digging on the network at all. But I do think that there is something like a little bit about, as a husband watching your wife be like, I want to be a housewife, it just can't be good.
Speaking of BravoCon, I watched you moderate the hell out of those panels. And I have to say that I had some tech
difficulties. You know about that. The first one. But anyway, you know I'm nuts. Okay, sorry.
I'm nuts as well. When I saw your show, I was like, I understand. I understand even more why I am such a fan, but also like why you are a genius is because you are so much love and respect. We have so many thoughts. We have so many fingers out that are trying to, you know, whatever.
It's extreme ADHD is what it is.
But see, what I have that I want to ask you about is like, I have ADHD coupled with people pleasing, and producer Nathaniel was actually talking to me about it a bit on the Substack of it all. We just had a gorgeous episode, but you had a moment with Heather Dubrow that I thought was really like well done, because you had what I thought was like a really funny sort of like nod to the Orange County Gina of it all. And then Heather sort of, I don't even know how to describe it. Just
twisted
like
it.
Twisted. Yeah. But you, I think, did a beautiful job of sort of like acknowledging and then smoothing and then pushing. What is your feeling when you are, though, challenged or maybe misinterpreted? Do you find that you people please? Do you are at this juncture in your life? Are we doubling down? How is Michelle Collins sort of using that moment to like move to the next?
So, you know, someone with this people pleasing thing. And I learned that people who have ADHD have this thing called justice sensitivity, where if, for example, getting skipped in line is like an easy example, but if someone skips me in line or driving in Miami, my road rage lately needs, I'm going to get shot in the head, by the way. I'm just letting you know, this may be my last interview ever, because every day I go out, I'm like, today might be the day I just get shot. Like, I go, when I see people acting entitled or like animals or whatever it is, I will open my mouth. And that is certainly, that comes in your 40s because you just start not giving as big of a shit.
I see. So you're saying justice sensitivity is the need to
just stick up for yourself, stick up for other
people. Stick up for yourself.
You know, and say, I think for the most part, I still people please for sure. And I still really, this is going to sound so, I mean, I'm coming off like people are going to be like, who does she think she is? Because whatever. I really go out of my way to try to like make people feel good, which I know is that people pleasing element in me. But, you know, when I'm in a restaurant or a store or whatever it is, I really like to connect with people. Like
My husband hates when I become friends with a server. Hates.
It's the best.
Is there anything better than booking the server's affection? Is there anything better?
By the way, how do you think you get free drinks, dum-dums? Like, that's what happens. I don't do it for the perks because I really like to make people feel good, but there are perks involved that don't hurt, you know? So,
do you find
that two sides of me? Sorry.
Well, no, speaking of the two sides of it all, I think that you have this life with at your parents' condo in Miami, but you also have this international living. In fact, Brian Moylan is a dear friend of mine. And
oh, my God.
We often talk about Michelle Collins as well. And of course, about his life in London and your life abroad. Yeah. Would you say that there is a version of yourself? Do you change at all when you are living? Well, actually, before I go into that, can you tell the listeners, how did you make that happen? How did you make it happen so that you could be in the States for whether it's just working or life, but also find yourself in all these fabulous cities across the globe? And when did that become a priority in your life?
Well, it officially, I officially left New York, I think it was 2022 officially, and I had applied for a visa in the Netherlands. There's this thing called the Dutch American Friends Treaty, or DAFT. I didn't come up with that. But anyway, they're so funny, the Dutch. They're so funny. I mean, just forget it. They're literally. So I was able to live there for 2 years, you know, coming back for work and whatever else, which was a dream for me, honestly. And I really wanted, I'm sure it was like part midlife crisis, but truth be told, COVID in New York was really difficult on me. It made me extremely anxious, like panic attack anxious, genuinely. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And
I was there the exact same time. Also had the panic attacks. Makes a lot of sense. I would have also, but you actually took the steps to get the fuck out.
I don't know how I could have lasted there. And before I did that, I did like spend the summer in the Netherlands. The difference being I was paying rent and hotel, which goodbye. I mean, that was, you know, draining me. And now I just don't have an apartment. And I'd say one of the most annoying questions I get from everyone, and I know why they ask it, because it's like, I would ask it to people, is where are you living? So where are you? What's your living situation like? And when you tell people, well, I'm living all over right now. I have storage units in like 4 international cities, but I don't, sad but true, but I don't have an apartment. You can tell that they're judging, and it's like, but why are you judging? Because you wouldn't be able to do it. Or you can see that they want to be like, oh, but I know it's coming from a place of, I don't know what it is. What do you think it is, Eric? Like,
oh, I'll tell you, you don't have to say it, because okay, my dumb gay ass brain just equated your international lifestyle to open relationships, and forgive me, but if I may,
go on.
There are people who have a judgmental oop, 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 je ne sais quoi. And I think part of it comes from the part of their selves that wishes they had the blank to do so. So the people are like, so where even are you, is the part of them that wishes that they had the flexibility to live their bliss. And I think their own resentment that they are tied down by whatever it is. Much like people are like, oh, so you are fucking other people. I'm going to judge you, but deep down, I'm going to wonder, why am I not a person who could ever even consider that reality?
Will you send me your therapist's info? Because you are absolutely opening my mind. You're
as
great.
As a neurotic Jew, I've been in so much therapy. As a neurotic gay Jew from the Midwest with a straight bully of a twin brother, the amount of therapy I've had to do to figure out why I am the way that I am, and to allow myself to be my slutty, silly, overthinky, sugar addicted, gay ass person. Like I'm all about a self-care therapy. And I think that seeing other people, the reason why we have the ADHD person, people pleasing empath thing, is because we were so bullied that we had to gauge other people's feelings and emotions. And maybe even, might we put a word on it, taking care of maybe our mother's emotions, which I myself very much have. Exactly. And I know you understand that. So I think that I've had to do so much inner work and outer work with a therapist and otherwise to just make sense of it all. And that's that's probably why when I first started listening to you, it all made so much sense, because I'm like, there's crossover. And I think that you living in all these different places, I only have like sheer healthy jealousy of just like, I want to be able to have my own business like you do, and then go and work somewhere and then see a life that is outside of the one life you have, whether it's in Miami or New York or otherwise. Like, I think you've been able to have such a broader view of the world, and I'm sure it's changed your perspective on your own self and your own life. And would you say that when you are abroad, if we go into like the men of it all, is there a difference in men in the US versus the men that you are coming across abroad?
1000%. They're all toxic, but in different ways. It's really interesting. Like and that's really true. It's true. And I hate to say it, I am online way too much. And I do think that my algorithm is like poisoning me to men in a way that I don't think is healthy. And it's like, it's really interesting how that works. And I have to catch it happening, because I keep getting, this is not going to sound nice, whatever, but I keep getting served these like women on Instagram who are dating, and they're like, I won't mention any names. There's one in particular who I literally hate this person, and I don't follow her. She comes up for me every day, and I sit and I watch the whole thing like every day. I can't look at her. I genuinely loathe her. Okay. And I'm like, oh, I got to watch her video, you know? And she is like a really, I hate to say it, she's around my age, single, you know, pretty enough, whatever. Not that that matters, but let's be honest, kind of does. And successful, whatever. And she cannot find a man, but then she like cries about it in her car and like posts these things. And I'm like, this is so humiliating to me. I can't even believe that you would put yourself out there in a way. But also to me, there is something a little bit cringe about anyone like talking or making their whole Instagram account as like single girl dating. To me is a death sentence. I'm like, you will never meet anyone this way.
Don't disagree. I think if you've had dating issues before, then you talking about the dates or crying about it in your car, it's not signaling to the universe that someone's going to come and say, I want that.
Exactly.
I follow a gay guy that does that. Oh. A gay guy that's every video is about, who's my husband? Are you my husband? I need my husband. And I understand the impulse. And I'm not, and now I sound like an asshole because I am married, but I understand the impulse, and you want to put your heart out there and your art out there. But I think if the actual heart angle of your content is, why won't anybody date me? Watch me cry about it. Oh. Are we communicating? Maybe let's come at it from a different angle, you know, an angle of abundance even.
Yes. 1000% agree. I have to say, I'm in a great place right now, truly. Like, I feel great. I travel. I date. I have zero pressure on the situation. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Feelings get hurt. I'm a human being, obviously. Or vice versa, I'm sure, you know, in life, whatever. But as far as the international scene is concerned, you know, humor is like top for me. Like, I have to have a man be funny. And finding an actual funny straight man is not easy. It does not. And especially, and I'm going to sound braggy, but my kind of funny. Which is in a way gay funny, but it's also quick. It's like, you know, you got to be fast, or at the very least laugh at me. You know, one of my kinks are straight men who hide their laugh. Did I ever talk to you about this? Like a hot straight guy who like won't show me that he's laughing is like, to me, this is maybe too revealing. One of the hottest things to me when they like don't want me to know. What?
Michelle, I'm married to a repressed Catholic man. If you think I have not fought to get a laugh, so that's your kink. My kink is a man who I can tell is too shy and repressed to show his true freak flag, but underneath I know it's going. All I want is to reveal the freak of the shy that's inside the shy man. And I think it's just like they say when you're watching an actress cry in a film, it's much more powerful to see her try to not cry.
Yes,
much
Rose
like a straight
Byrne.
Man.
Rose Byrne. I know the clip you're referring to that's been going
Rose
viral.
Rose Byrne.
Yes. So you
that's
understand.
You with a straight man and laughter.
That's the thing. And like, you know, one of my biggest pet peeves is like straight guys who are like, I care about humor. Whenever they say that, they want you to find them funny. I'm like, well, be funny and I'll find you funny. I mean, listen, I have dated funny men. Like, this is not impossible. You know, they're out there, but the Dutch are not funny. And I actually said they're hot, though. That's the confusion, is that you get there and I'm a tall woman. They're all huge. It's the first place I've ever been in my life where I didn't feel othered for my height. It was like,
Yeah.
It's a very liberating feeling as a tall woman to walk around a city, even in a heel, and no one gives a shit. I can't tell you how freeing that was. But I'll say that, the Dutch, they're hot, but oh my God, just the cockiest. There is not a hint of humility in that country.
Oh.
And they're a bit passionless. And it's funny, that goes when it comes to finances, cuisine, romance, humor. It is a utilitarian country. And that goes even for platonic relationships. I have Dutch friends. They're all gay men and a couple of women, but like, you know.
You actually, I think you were in Amsterdam for Thanksgiving, and my horny ass saw a photo you posted with some like gorgeous gay men.
They just got married in Rome. They're the handsomest men I know. I hate to tell you, and they're married.
Shout out to them.
Oh my God, Marco and Frank. They're two of my favorite people roaming the planet. Marco happens to be Italian, probably one of the funniest, most gorgeous men I've ever met. And I love Frank. I'm like, if there were a throuple to invite me, even as their maid, like, I don't even want to, I want to be around them. I love them.
I'm not going to ask about if they're open or closed, but one day I will meet them and then inappropriately.
I don't know the answer, to be honest.
And I'll find out.
I think they're closed.
Can I give you some unsolicited feeling about what I want to manifest for you in terms of love? Is that okay?
Sure.
You know what I see for Michelle Collins is, yes, somebody who has the wit and the humor, but I do think that he errs more toward guffaw laugh. And anytime Michelle Collins says the line, he is the first person to get it. But he's also obsessed with the spotlight shining on you. And he can, in private, you know, do the banter. But I think when it comes to like in public, he is like really on the Michelle Collins bandwagon, but low-key has the wit, but doesn't lead with it.
Wouldn't that be, is he out there, Eric?
I think he is.
Would he be listening? Well, listen, you know, I spend a lot of time in England. I know that you are friends with Brian. I do love a British man. Their issue, by the way, my show should be going around the world and just reading every country's men to filth, because I'm telling you, like, first of all, it would be a huge hit. And then, I mean, I would get assassinated probably by episode 3.
Wait, what country would be the highest risk of assassination? Let's go there.
Well, that's a loaded question. I refuse to answer that. I'm so sorry. But not in this
And I don't think
age.
You should.
No. But British men are very funny. And they love the good crack, as they say, a little banter. But then all of their dads are drunks, you know, and that's a whole other bag. It's like, that's a whole other thing. The repression there is interesting in England.
We'll talk about therapy. Talk about a straight man's relationship to therapy, which is non-existent. But I do think there is so much opportunity. And we, if there, for the four straight men listening, we encourage you and thank you if you are in therapy. And your dads love you. And we do too.
Yeah.
Listen, Michelle Collins, we somehow only have a couple minutes left, so I want to go into...
I have Nordy. It's raining here. I'm not leaving the house.
God.
So keep me here for another hour.
For the next hour, we're going to talk about the photo you have with Stanley Tucci as somebody who is deeply in love with a bald man. Can you explain how that meeting happened, and do bald men also get you soaking wet?
That's a sort of crass question, but I'm a lady at all times, Eric, but I'll say this. I love Stanley Tucci. I love a bald. You know, I talk about CBS as the good bald versus the bad bald. There is such a thing. I've dated both kinds of balds. I have dated very good balds and crypt keeper balds.
Sure.
And Gladys in Weapons balds, if you know what I mean. Do you know what I'm saying now? Like, there is that there. Those bald men are also out there, and they won't shave their head. And I'm like, please, I'm literally on my knees.
My biggest fear, biggest fear is I'm surrounded by enough people who won't tell me to shave my head. Biggest fear.
But let me tell you something. You would know when. And also, you have great hair and you look great the way you are. But
thank you.
I'm telling you that there are just some men out there who are grasping, like, I don't even know what to compare it to, but they're grasping onto those last Homer hairs. And I'm like, babe, you're hot. You don't need them. Knock them out.
I went through like a really devastating period in my like mid-20s when a guy, a barber in Brooklyn said, oh, your hair is thinning. And I said, I said to my friends after, I was like, this fucking dumb guy told me I was balding. Cut to, saddest story I've ever told. I'm filming a sketch in Washington Square Park. Hold for applause. And we look at the footage after. The overhead shot of me sitting fully in the sun on the Washington Square fountain revealed to me a certain reflection of the sun on my scalp.
I thought you were going to see the drone in it. And then the overhead, and I saw the drone in my head. Yeah.
I could see the serial number of the drone reflected.
Yeah.
So I was with my friend and the guy that shot it, and I had to walk outside of the coffee shop and be like, I am balding. And so from that moment on, I went to the dermatologist, got the Propecia, and now I'm like 3 pills deep in minoxidil every single day. And now it's like I've maintained what I have and I'm fine with it. But like, there was a moment where I talked about that in therapy, about like how I felt, you know, like, of course, my 3 straight brothers who are not in entertainment have the most perfect heads of hair. Granted, they're all 5'4", but like I am the only gay actor, you know, living this nightmare and dream. And of course, I'm the one losing my hair. But I
have a question. Sorry to interrupt
ask
you.
Me.
Have you tried the sacred oil from Beyonce's line that everyone is raving about?
I'm about 2 Amazon carts away from that being a reality because everyone's raving about it and I haven't tried it yet.
You know, that'd be the first thing I do. I have the opposite problem where I literally have electrolysis scheduled for Wednesday. Like I look like you, like within 3 days. I'm not even joking. But Yeah, I've heard that that stuff is a miracle. But the thing I don't get about it is, like, how would you like masking tape your scalp? Like, how would you figure out where the hair is going to grow? I think it's more for like the back part, though, you know?
I see. Well, yeah. And speaking of international, all the guys going to Turkey, and then you hear about the plane ride back and all you're seeing are like blood from the back of their head where they took the follicle, and then the like marshmallow Michelin man forehead that's so swollen from the surgery. I'm not saying I'm anti that. There's a really hot guy I follow on Instagram that was always hot and funny, but he posted a side by side of pre hair transplant and post. And I was like, I know that you're not different as you are as a human being, but I respect you a lot more with this head of hair. And I don't, I'm not proud to say that.
I have no judgment for people who go to Turkey. You know, when I was in London a couple years ago, there was a documentary that I saw on like ITV or whatever called Turkey Teeth. And I thought it was, I didn't even know that turkeys had teeth. So I was like, well, I have to watch because I love small animal teeth. So I literally was like, whatever this is about. I was like, I have to run home and watch Turkey Teeth.
Turkey Teeth.
And then it was about people who go get their fucking teeth done, their veneers in Turkey. I was so mad. I stopped it in like 2 minutes. I'm like, I don't care about this. I want little turkey teeth.
I don't see a tiny animal teeth on my screen and I'm not happy.
I think
Miley Cyrus, someone asked recently if she went back to OG animal teeth, because she for a while had a lot. And I know Kyle Richards, a lot of the housewives have gone. We're living in an era of
downgrade of the veneers. The veneer.
Yeah. And Miley was in an interview where she looked less. Yeah, I think she downgraded, and you know what, we support everyone's teeth journey, but you're not going to Turkey for your teeth are perfect.
I'm not. No, I am. They're getting a little crooked, as you can see, but right now they're fine. There's an angle of mine that I do go full Mrs. Ed, and so, like if I'm laughing and I have my head back, there is a gum to tooth ratio I'm very uncomfortable with. I will never. I know what I'm saying. Just believe me. So, yeah, but I'm fine. Listen, you know.
Well, you're hearkening to a very important issue we have right now, which is that we're being photographed at too many angles. And I think that we were never meant to see ourselves from so many. And that's partly why, like, on-camera work can be really, really risky and vulnerable, is because you see yourself in ways that I don't think the human body was meant to see their own shape.
You're going to tell me, you know, when we were growing up as women, they said to hold a hand mirror down there. I've never done that. I'm not interested. Please leave me alone. I don't want to know from the.
That is between God and that.
Yeah.
That
I don't need like the sewage view or whatever, you know, from like the hole underneath. Like, I'm all good. I know that's ignorant, but it is what it is. My teeth are fine. And I wanted to say one other thing. I know we're wrapping. Sorry I didn't put any makeup on for you now, by the way. Also, I got this. This is going to shock you to your core. That this shirt is from the Anthropology sale room. It's so ugly. The more I'm sitting here, I'm like, wait, I got it yesterday. It was very cheap. Okay. And I was like, oh, wear my new Anthropology shirt. And now I'm like, wait, I don't like it. I don't know.
It's the cut that I'm loving.
I love the cut too. That's why, because it's kind of like chic, like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing here.
It's Cafe Carlyle. I think that you are an absolute, this is just the beginning of our love story, is the first thing I'm going to say. The second thing I'm going to say is we have a final question on this podcast that I must needs ask. And that final question is, Michelle Collins, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
You know, it's funny because the one I was going to say, I think, is dead. Can I still say her?
And you can. And we actually hope you would.
You know what? Actually, I'll edit that because I was going to. Okay, I'll tell you who I was going to say. But they're kind of similar.
Give us dead first.
Dead first was Joan Plowright. The actress Joan Plowright, who I just recently on an airplane in public rewatched Dennis the Menace with Walter Matthau on United. And little Mason Gamble, he's the littlest, cutest little actor. And if you've never Googled him, he's one of the most gorgeous grown men. Like,
really?
It's creepy when you say that, because it's like he was like 6 in the movie or whatever. But he's like 30 now. I think I can say it. Like a true polo model. Anyway, such a great kid. But she was Mrs. Wilson in it, and she was so good. But she was also in a movie called Avalon, where she played like an old Jewish grandmother. It's with Aidan Quinn, Elizabeth Perkins, a little Elijah Wood. It's from the 90s, this movie. And if you've never seen Avalon, it's a family favorite in my household, and we love it. And she is the queen of that film. She's been in a lot of stuff, but I love Joan Plowright. Long dead. the living, but in a similar vein to me, because they're both little gray-haired ladies who make me laugh, is Miriam Margolis.
Oh, my God. Such a genius answer.
There's just the funniest person alive. I mean, really.
Well, it's actually kind of funny how they do have some crossover, Miriam and Joan, because so first of all, Miriam is, much like Michelle Collins, a dream on a couch on an interview moment. I think, though, that some people that might not know Joan Plowright immediately, I just want to shout out that she was also in one might call the most important film of the early 2000s, Bringing Down the House with Queen Latifah.
Oh, yes. Never
seen
it.
And she had a very, oh my God. I saw it in theaters. I was the type of girl that was like a Queen Latifah vehicle. I just recently watched Last Holiday. Is that the Queen Latifah?
Oh, yeah. With LL Cool J, right? Yes.
Yes. And that's like a really, I mean, under celebrated. But Joan is an amazing answer. She's in 101 Dalmatians. Like you said, Dennis the Menace. We just shot her out. Miriam Margolis is really shocks me, her ability to make a headline still to this day.
She's the best. She's so funny. And you want to know why? Because she's so unfiltered. And I have a theory that the only people who are allowed to be unfiltered are elderly people. And it's criminal in my opinion. And drag queens, actually. I'll say those two things. I think drag queens can be as funny and filthy and inappropriate and not get canceled. And same with the elderly. Like, look at Judi Dench. Judi Dench just said some crazy shit recently.
She did. Like, I just saw that.
You know, I've never been a huge Dench head, I'll be honest. I know a lot of people love her. Like, I mean, she's fine, whatever. But she's like really talking a lot of stuff lately. And people are like, well, she's 91. All the best.
She's
like,
91. Yeah, wait. Not that we need to go deep into it, but wasn't she like, I think Kevin Spacey.
Yes. She's like, I think you should get out of Harvey Weinstein. Even worse than Kevin. I mean, they're both criminals, but like, come on.
Yeah, me leading with Kevin Spacey. Yeah, she goes, I think Harvey Weinstein has done his time. You're right. I think let's give him now a nice vacation. But listen, at 91, you're right. What are we going to cancel Judy? Are we going to cancel Judi Dench?
Can you imagine? And the same with Miriam. She's funny as shit. She's elderly. She has never spoken a non-truth in her life. She is as honest as anybody you will ever see in an interview. And it's so, I hate to say it, it's like so refreshing that we can still allow that, because who else is doing that? Genuinely.
Well, if I may, I think as we round out this interview, I think that you are somebody that I equate to the character actresses who speak their mind unfilteringly, because you have a point of view that is never punching down. You are somebody who celebrates the finer things in life, which is whether it's travel, a real housewife, a Danish man. I think that the people who can speak their mind unfilteringly are the people like Michelle Collins. And I am so grateful that you spoke your mind on this Gay Ass podcast. Michelle Collins, you have made a dream come true. I want to shout out the people that made this happen. And thank you, Michelle, for being here.
By the way, this is my plan today. I'm like, well, it's good I made time in my schedule to make this happen. It's pouring rain. I'm going to now unpack officially and like do laundry today. No, first of all, I had the best time today. I'm so glad we were able to meet. Next time, obviously, I'm in LA or what have you. I would love to say hi in person.
Absolutely.
But it's been a pleasure. Thank you. I really had a good time. I appreciate you.
And thank you. Will you tell these listeners where to follow you, about your show, and just anything else that you would like to plug?
Sure. Well, I have a pretty much daily show called The Michelle Collins Show on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/mishcall, there is a free trial. You can pay for the year in advance. It's I think $12 a month, but it's so many shows. I'm like, that's what it's $12. To me, it's like half a martini for a month of content. You know, that's how I liken everything. Like, how many drinks would this be? So it's a cheap glass of wine and you get hours and hours of entertainment, including fabulous co-hosts. Eric, please come co-host one day. Would love to have you.
Any day.
Anytime. And patreon.com/mishcall. Follow me on Instagram at mishcall, MICHCOLL. I'm on Twitter still. I hate to say it, but still makes me laugh. I'm so sorry, Eric, but it does.
I am too. And I got literally canceled at a party 4 days ago because of it. But whatever.
Everything sucks right now. The world sucks. It makes us laugh. I know, we're horrible. I don't pay the money to be on it. You know what I mean?
I don't either. Like, and all these, yeah. They're saying the same thing about Spotify. The same, like, everyone's terrible. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm gonna still watch the porn, and that's on me. Michelle, I have linked the your Instagram. Mm-hmm. I have linked the Patreon for the Michelle Collins Show. I have I'm gonna be spreading the gospel as much as I can, and will continue to. And Michelle, have an amazing rest of your gay ass day. And
you too. And thank you again, and happy holidays, happy new year, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for joining me on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, and thank you to Michelle Collins for being everything and more. Now, speaking of more, if you want more gay assery, the Substack guest this week is producer Nathaniel, responding to Sam Altizer's comments from last week about big hairy bellies, and warning, we do include some of Nathaniel's belly slaps. So please go to substack.com/@EricWills. The link is in the description to enjoy our gorgeous, sexy as hell producer Nathaniel. I also am excited about my tour that is for my solo show, Why All the Drama? And you can get tickets to that. I'm already on sale for Chicago, San Francisco, Joe's Pub in New York, and finalizing the Seattle date soon. So thanks for your patience with that. And I hope you're staying sane during this holiday season. And do me a favor, stay gay. You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and follow the Instagram at Gay Ass Podcast. For more gay assery, the real girlies are over on Substack, where you get bonus episodes every single week and live chats with me and other gay ass guests. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.